Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And thank you for tuning in to the Shame Free Zone. I'm Veronica Monet, your host. I have a guest tonight that I have known for quite some time. We're actually very, very good friends. His name is David Steinberg, and he's an author, also a very proficient and unique photographer. I'll read a little of his bio here, but really, we are such old friends. I mostly just want to catch up and let you eavesdrop on the conversation. We're going to be talking about how David takes pictures of people having sex, which is actually a very unique art form, and he does it incredibly well. But he's got some books out there. One's called Divas San Francisco, Portraits of Transsexual Women. Another book, Photo Sex, Fine Art Sexual Photography Comes of Age. There's Erotic by Nature, A Celebration of Life, Love, and of Our Wonderful Bodies. And there's also Erotic Impulse, Honoring the Sensual Self. He's written for Salon, Playboy, Boston Phoenix, Los Angeles Weekly, San Francisco Weekly, Arts and Opinion, Cupido, The Sun, Libido, and The Realist. And he had a syndicated column for about 15 years on sex and gender issues. It was called Comes Naturally. That's actually, I think, what you were writing when we first met, David. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. You and I haven't sat across a table from each other from quite some time, nor have we've been in a studio taking photos for quite some time, but you were my photographer quite a few years.
Well,
I don't know if you knew that.
Well, it was certainly great working with you.
Oh, it's a lot of fun working with you, too. You have a unique gift for being able to pull people's souls out of their pictures, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, some people take pictures of form. I think you take pictures of essence. And I'm particularly intrigued with the way that you capture people having sex on camera, and you've done a couple of photo sessions. I'm thinking more like three photo sessions of that nature with me. One with my husband, one with a client of mine who is quadriplegic, and some very unique photos there of differently abled sexuality involving a wheelchair, no less. And you took pictures of Aunt Peg before she passed on, beautiful, vibrant woman who had an illustrious career in the porn industry and was incredible in front of the camera right up into her 70s. Do you want to tell us what it was like working with Aunt Peg?
Well, yeah.
Juliet Carr, for people who don't know who she is, she discovered Nina Hartley.
Well, and Peg Juliet Anderson was a unique porn actress in the 70s and thereafter. I think she was in her 40s before she began even making films, and certainly in the 70s, you didn't see older people in sex films. In fact, you didn't see much of people being genuine in any way, but one thing about Juliet Aunt Peg was that she was a true sexual enthusiast. She was brilliantly in tune with her own body and with the bodies of people that she was sexual with. She celebrated sex, and she did it in films at a time when nobody was really doing that. Everybody was faking one way or another, but she was there for real and developed a following of people who appreciated her for that. And I met her through the network of sexual explorers in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, and we were good friends. And when I started doing this project of photographing couples being sexual, trying to capture something real about sexual connection between people on film rather than performance and grandiosity and stuff. But, you know, my interest was to try to see if it's possible to get in photographs some sense of what is really going on between two people who have a real relationship with each other when they're being sexual with each other. And
I think that would be less of, you know, it'd be less of a task if you were using video, but using still shots. One, you know, I always wondered how you knew when to snap the photo.
Well, that's you know, there are a number of photographers now doing what I've come to call fine art sexual photography, which is to say photography of people being sexual, but trying to do this in an artistic way, meaning to have something to say about sex other than, oh, look, sex is happening and we get to watch, but to be able to make some kind of a statement about what sex is, what's important about sex, and so on. And there are a number of photographers doing that now, and each of us has his or her own perspective. You know, what interests me most about sex, whether it's my own sex life or sex more generally, is kind of the intimacy and the vulnerability and the connectedness that can happen between two people in the act of being sexual. So when I'm photographing a couple, and most of the people that I photograph, by the way, are not like Juliet, like Ann Pegg, not people who have performed in front of a camera before. They're, I'd say, ordinary people, ranging from 19 to 75, people of all body types, sexual persuasions, ethnicities, whatever. My goal is to say that we're all beautifully sexual people, not just young, thin, glamorous people that we see in everything from porn films to advertising.
Can I just say, however, that young, thin, glamorous people sometimes aren't the least bit sexy?
Well, that's true too, and I've had the good fortune of working with, I photographed at this point over the last 11 years just over 160 couples, and some people more than once. So I've done about 200 photo shoots with couples, usually in their homes. I don't direct them. I don't tell them what to do. I just try to create an environment where they can relax and be themselves, and somehow manage to do that with me being there, with the camera and lights and so on being there. And then the question, like you say, is when do you snap the picture? And I think it comes down to, you know, I snap the picture when I see something that looks important to me about what's going on between the people I'm working with. So if what you're interested in is the shape of somebody's body or what body part is doing what to what body part, then that's when those are the pictures you'll take. But for me, I take the pictures. There are moments where you can see so much of what's going on between two people if you can just freeze that moment and capture it, as they say in photography. And it's why I like still photography so much more than video. Because in video or in real life, you know, everything is moving along very fast, and we don't get to stop generally and just say, let's just stop right now and over the next 2 minutes just look at what's happening for me this instant. And what a camera can do, what a still photograph can do, is it captures one instant and it holds it, and then you get to look at it, you know, in all its depth, in all its levels. So when I take a picture, it's when I see something that's going on that just seems to encapsulate what the energy that's going on between these two people. And it will be different energy, obviously, depending on who I'm working with. Sometimes it's hot and passionate. Sometimes it's warm and fuzzy. Sometimes it's dreamy. Sometimes, you know, it's intense. It goes all over the map. But when there's if you get the right moment, I think you can look at that picture over and over again for years, really, and it will bring back all the levels of what was going on between the people at that time. So that's what I try to do with the photograph.
So I'm just wondering, David, what sent you on this journey? What was it? Just the fact that so much of the pornography that was out there was just so superficial and boring, or I'm just, you know.
Well, originally, yeah, what set me on, I feel like I'm on several journeys. I mean, the specific journey is photographing couples, and the larger journey for me is trying to put material out into the world that says something interesting about sexuality, and that part of it. It did come out of the fact that I started this. The first project that I worked on was the book Erotic by Nature. That was my first book. It's a hardcover, 200 and some odd page book of photography and erotic fiction. And it came out in 1988, and I looked around, and the only sexual depictions that were around was what was coming out of the porn industry, because nobody that I knew of, was interested in or unafraid to photograph sex except the porn people. And they had their own agenda and their own purpose. I mean, porn was being manufactured, and I think still is, basically, either for people to masturbate to or to some extent for couples to get aroused together.
Right.
The purpose of porn is to give you generally a fantasy that charges you up sexually, and then you can do what you want with that energy. But the purpose of, but that's a different sort of imagery than imagery that conveys what it's like for real, for people who are not in the process of making a film, being sexual with each other. And I was hungry for that kind of image. I wanted to see it, and I believed that other people would want to see it too. That I believe that people, a lot of people, purchased porn not because porn was as it was being produced was exactly what they wanted, but because it's all that was available. And what I convinced a bunch of people to put up, a fair amount of money, because producing photo books is not cheap. Was to say that I think that there are a lot of people out there who really want to see a different kind of sexual imagery. And Erotic by Nature essentially proved that. It was a little book done by a little publishing company with no budget, no advertising budget, no major promotional opportunities. And yet it sold 30,000 copies over 25 years.
Wow.
Which is quite unusual for an art book, it's
kidding.
Common for a novel, but this is a $45 book, so
that's exceptional.
So
David,
what it showed was that there really are a lot of people who want to see a different kind of imagery.
Yeah, and this was around the time that amateur videos were taking off, and people were like taping themselves and putting it, sharing it with other people.
Yep. Yeah, and that was another thing. Some people at least, were tired of seeing glamorized, larger-than-life people. They wanted to see people like themselves. And, that's what I want people to see in the photographs that I take. I don't want people to look at it and say, oh, if I were 10 pounds lighter, if I looked differently, if I was younger, and so on.
If you had a bigger penis.
A bigger penis, bigger breasts, smaller belly, smaller thighs, then I would be sexually interesting or sexually attractive or whatever. What I wanted people to do is look and see people that were like themselves, you know, thin people maybe or heavy people. As you know, because I worked with you, I'm doing a whole series of photographs of people with disabilities being sexual, older people, all the people that tend to get marginalized in terms of their sexuality and their desirability. I wanted people, you know, who were whatever, middle-aged, who had a big belly or whatever it was, to be able to look at a picture and they say, oh, that person is kind of like me, and look at that picture. It's powerful, it's sexy, it's hot. So that instead of it being a statement, oh, I'm not good enough, it becomes a statement of, I'm great just the way I am.
Well, I also think it highlights what sex and sexy is, which we get confused a lot of times, and we'll think that, you know, what is sexy is a particular body shape or age or race or hair color. People get fixated on those kind of things. And oftentimes I think that the pursuit of that, even, you know, just trying to find sexual partners who fit that description, is a pretty empty experience. What I think is very powerful is how sexy love and passion is, that when people are being passionate and really caring about each other, that has a hugely powerful impact on the person who's viewing it. Far more powerful than simply, you know, observing the forms of people's bodies. I think that what happens to people physiologically when they're trying to assess somebody, like they're judging a beauty pageant, is actually kind of a tightening experience. A lot of times people kind of get, you know, tense, and their breathing gets constrained, and because a lot of it is it's about using the brain and trying to be kind of, you know, judgmental, critiquing. And even if they're not doing it to themselves, it's still kind of an extension of that same judgmental criticism that they do often apply to themselves. And if they're just simply witnessing the power of passion, I think people's breathing gets expansive. They kind of have an aha moment. You know, it's much more enlivening.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, we don't get to see other people being passionate. Most people don't very often. People do that in the privacy of their home. So, I mean, the question becomes, how do you get people to go into that deeply passionate, intimate, vulnerable place with a third person and a camera and, you know, lights and all that? So what I focus on, I want everything that I do is designed that the people I'm photographing can feel comfortable with me, comfortable with the situation of being photographed, so they can relax, not feel that they have to perform some ultimately magnificent anything, that they can just be themselves, you know, and be connected with each other in an intimate way. So I photograph people at home. I meet with them before we do a shoot so that we get to know each other a little bit. If they have any questions about me, you know, my energy, my intentions, I think I'm pretty good at letting people see quickly that, you know, that I'm a straight shooter, that I'm not some weird guy trying to get his rocks off by taking pictures. I tell people that that this whole shoot is about you. I don't pose people. I move my lights around where they are rather than have them sit in one place, because that's where the lighting works best for me. I don't have some sense of I'm trying to capture any particular picture or any particular act or anything. I tell people, whatever you're doing, if you're there with each other and being real and excited with each other, I will get wonderful pictures. You don't have to hand them to me, and I don't have to tell you, do this, do that. In fact, I found early on, every time I thought I knew something that would make it better and I would suggest something, almost always it was a mistake, because whatever I said kind of interrupted what was naturally going on between the people I was working with. And I was fortunate, and I've been fortunate, in that almost all the people that I photographed with, when they're being sexual, they really are, there is a lot of powerful energy. I mean, I think that there are people whose sex lives are not very happy, you know, and photographing that would be a different experience. But people have come to me sort of by word of mouth, and somebody who sets themselves up for this kind of experience is, you know, it says something about who they are in the first place. And I've just been lucky that the people that I've gotten to work with have just been wonderful in terms of how they were being sexual with each other. So all I had to do was find a way to get what was happening on film.
Yeah, and I think, have you heard of the Comstock films?
No, I don't think so.
Comstock makes these adult videos. Oftentimes the people that appear in these videos are actual porn stars, but they're not having porn star sex, which I've started, you know, I'm working with couples and individuals, both males and females, around their sexuality and communication skills. And in particular, I sometimes get people who are addicted to pornography. And it can, you know, this whole thing about sex addiction, very controversial on both sides of the fence. It's interesting. Conservative people think everybody's a sex addict. Sex-positive people don't think there is such a thing as sex addiction. Those are generalizations, of course. But I have worked with actual sex addicts who are verging on agoraphobia, and they're unemployable because they can't stop masturbating long enough to hold down a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be a really debilitating issue. Certainly, you know, if we're talking about somebody like Tiger Woods, I don't see him as a sex addict at all. I see him as just some guy who was, you know, supporting his wife, taking care of his kids, and having a lot of fun. but if I'm working with somebody who really does have a true sex addiction, and it's, you know, really creating an inability to leave the home and to go to work and to function, then I will sometimes direct them to get a Comstock film, which sounds a little counterintuitive. Somebody's addicted to porn, and I prescribe more porn. But what's been interesting is that sex addicts oftentimes are addicted to avoiding emotional contact. They're addicted to avoiding feelings, and that is the nature of all addictions. If you're addicted to alcohol or drugs, you're trying to avoid feelings. So by directing them to go watch a Comstock film, a lot of times what happens is they will cry because the people in the video, although they're having sex and they're naked, actually love each other and care about each other. And that is like so emotionally powerful that for somebody who's been trying to avoid feelings through addiction, it's really difficult to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's a fascinating thing to think about how revolutionary, you know, putting sex and love together is. And the fact that the performers, the people that are doing porn star sex, don't have sex that way at home either. So a lot of what we're seeing as pornographic images represent things that human beings don't actually derive any erotic value from.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that fantasy material, you know, you can incorporate fantasies into your life, but, you know, masturbatory fantasies generally are not what is going to be meaningful to you in terms of a real sex life with other real-life human beings. And you know, I think we're encouraged to put our energy that way because we've kind of turned over image-making to porn people, you know, to kind of an outlaw group of people who enjoy breaking rules and being outrageous. And what we're trying to do, those of us who are photographing sex in a different way, is to bring the idea of sexual imagery, you know, sort of back to the center, where to say, This is essentially, we're not trying, I mean, there are people who are trying to be outrageous, but the people whose work I admire, and Photosex, for example, is a book of 31 different photographers who do sexual work. And what interested me about their work was not that they were trying to be outrageous, but that they were just trying to be essentially wholesome, to say, look, all these different forms of sexuality are essentially about people connecting with each other, loving each other, getting close with each other, communicating with each other, you know, all stuff. I mean, who can object to that? You know, it's as basic as it comes. But in this culture, we have trouble including sex in the spectrum of what we can, you know, what a lot of people think of as wholesome. So, and part of that, I think a lot of how we think of ourselves and how we think about sex comes from the imagery that we see. And if all the imagery that's available to us is stuff that's produced in kind of the porn mentality, then when we're trying to figure out who we are, you know, when we're teenagers, when we don't really know, gee, I have all these feelings now, what am I going to do with them? And you look for guidance. And, of course, you know, every teenager now comes on porn. And if that's what they're, oh, this is how you're supposed to be when you're being sexual. And, of course, I mean, people are not stupid. They know that these are created events and not necessarily realistic. But I think we really suffer from the fact that we don't have imagery that's more real, that's more like, hey, take a look at this picture. This might give you a sense of what you might enjoy feeling when you're being sexual with whoever you want to be sexual with.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of some guy coming on a girl's back doesn't necessarily make the female body respond with an orgasm.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, in my office as a sexologist, I'm working with the pornographic fallout all day long, you know. Women are trying to figure out why they do what's in the movie and they don't get off. You know, what's wrong with me? Why am I not having an orgasm?
Yep.
Like, well, the porn stars aren't either, darling.
Right.
That's not how they have orgasms. They do it, you know, totally different when they're at home.
Yeah, I photograph people that I met through, you know, through the adult industry, and who said, gee, I met one couple, I've been doing some photography with kink.com, which is actually a wonderful group of people here in San Francisco who produce BDSM porn. And this couple said, we're looking for somebody to photograph us at home, not when I'm doing what I do here, but, you know, the way that we are when we're at home. And I said, oh, funny thing, because that's exactly what I do. And then a couple of weeks later, I did photograph them at their home being just absolutely delightful, loving, playful, good-hearted people, you know. I think it all depends on where we put our attention. You know, what do we give credibility to? If we say, oh, the glamorous people are really the sexiest people, it I think distorts us in a certain direction, and also in a self-defeating way, because most of us are not going to be super glamorous people. And I think all of that in some way is really designed to make us feel bad about ourselves. If we feel bad about ourselves sexually, people can sell us all. There's a lot of money to be made off of people who feel bad about themselves sexually. You can sell people big cars. You can sell people alcohol. You can sell people cigarettes. There's all things. If you feel bad about yourself, then, well, here, we'll give you this little crutch, and maybe you'll feel a little bit better. But if you feel good about yourself, maybe you won't need any of that stuff. And so there's, in some sense, there's no money to be made off of people who feel good about themselves. So I think that's the way advertising, television, film, and certainly porn films, you know, manipulate people's sexuality to make it harder for people to just feel good about who they are, instead of feeling like they have to somehow become somebody else in order to be attractive, to be acceptable, to be proper sexual people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, the whole idea of keeping sex a taboo, too. So people feel really bad about themselves. They feel ashamed of what they're doing. You know, it seems like it really is designed to make a lot of money. One thing about it, too, if people were not feeling bad about their penises, then who would sell all that Cialis, Levitra, and Viagra?
Sure. Yep. And then, and cosmetics and clothes and breast augmentations and everything else. I mean, you know, once people have some very specific glamorized notion of who they need to be, then it, you know, there are industries built around that.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually prefer the word artificial to glamorous, because I think we need to reclaim some of these words that have been taken away from us. Like, you know, the media and the dominant culture keeps trying to tell us what is sexy and what is glamorous. And interestingly enough, it has historically always eliminated certain people. You know, for a long time, minorities were completely out beyond the pale.
Mm-hmm.
Gradually, that has started to shift culturally, thanks no small part, I think, to MTV and the prevalence of rap, where we started seeing different body types. We actually, you know, it used to be kind of like the skinny white girl with the big breasts and the flat ass. That was the perfection, the sight of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting now, because our beauty standards have started to shift, and you'll see all kinds of Caucasian actresses that are worried that their butts aren't big enough. and they're working out, or they actually have developed this underwear that'll give you a butt that sticks out.
Uh-huh.
And it's silly, because one of the things that we don't do is allow for diversity. So if we do decide that this is what is beautiful, then it's like everybody wants to be that. And it seems like we have very, very short memories, so we don't seem to realize that over the course of hundreds of years, what we consider beautiful has just constantly changed. It's never really been the same.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it's like fashion. Fashion keeps changing so that people can feel bad about what they're wearing or bad about their hair.
Well, if it didn't keep changing, you wouldn't have to keep buying a new wardrobe.
Exactly. We all need a makeover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. So what are you working on nowadays? Are you still photographing couples having sex?
Yeah, I'm still doing couples. I did this book, Divas of San Francisco. That was a whole side trip for me, because I had gotten involved in the community here in San Francisco of transsexual women that I just thought were amazing people, and I wanted to do a bunch of essentially portrait. These are not photographs of people being sexual, but portrait photographs of these women and who they were, and so that book came out, I guess it's 3 years ago now, and but the big project I'm working on now is a book of the couples' photos, which will be black and white photos, essentially. I think it's going to be called This Thing We Call Sex. It's probably another year, 18 months before it will all be together, but I'm in the process of editing that right now, and that's pretty exciting. And I also want to do a book or a show that focuses on the sexuality of people with disabilities, because people with disabilities are just one more group of people who get written off the sexual map by the culture, and there's almost no fully sexual photography of people with disabilities. There's some nice photographs of nude people in wheelchairs and so on, but I'm talking about people just being sexual like people are. So I've done a series of those shoots, I guess. Well, maybe I've done 11 couples now involving people with studies, and I'd like to do either a show or a book of those photos as well. So those are my two big book projects right now. And then over the last year, I just kind of fell in. I seem to fall into things. I fell in with the people at kink.com. I work for a magazine in Norway called Cupido.
Right.
I've been working with them for 25 years. It's a wonderful magazine, unlike anything we have in this country, sort of a smart, sexy magazine that appreciates sexuality from the point of view of everything we've been talking about here.
Right.
And I've been their photo representative guy, soliciting photographers for them for 25 years now.
Oh, wow. So, well, I knew you had read some of my photos in there.
Yeah, you've been there, absolutely. Yeah, and they're great people. And anyway, I was doing a story for them. They were interested in kink.com. And so I got shown around there and asked if there was a way I could take photographs during one of their filmings. And kink.com, it's a long story, I guess, but they produce really an amazing number of videos. They operate 13, I think, or maybe 15 now, themed websites and different aspects of SM play. And the one group that I fell in with is a website called Public Disgrace, and it involves a submissive being brought in, and among other things, there's a large audience, and the audience get to play with her as well as the main actors and so on. So it was a situation in which it's possible to photograph because you're part of the audience and actually enjoy it when people in the audience take a lot of pictures. So I took some pictures there, and I was very taken with them. I mean, the situations that they create there are really intense. But they really pay very good attention to the submissives, and they're very conscientious in how they work with them. They have a submissive bill of rights, which is not just for show. They're very serious about it, that the submissive sets limits and is in control of what happens to her, and that the dominant people have responsibilities. They pay their people really well. And they just treat them. I know enough about BDSM play from my own life to be able to tell the difference when people are being treated well and not. So, at the end of a intense half hour long scene, when they break to set up the next scene, the psychological care that they do for the submissive is great, and during the scene as well. So,
well, you know, David, there was actually research out of Arizona establishing that the submissive receives a great deal of benefit from being a submissive.
Uh-huh.
But the researchers were actually measuring what happens to the blood and vital statistics, you know, things like, I suppose, the stress levels, hormone levels. And
mm-hmm.
So apparently being a submissive actually probably has more health benefits than being the dom.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. I think in a submissive dominant relationship that is a conscientious one, it can be very powerful and beneficial. I mean, not only physiologically but psychologically for everybody. Anyway, the point at kink.com was that there was this really wonderful humanity. I mean, exactly what we were talking about before when we were talking about the couple sex, of people being present with each other, caring about each other, tender with each other, vulnerable with each other. So, instead of photographing the scenes when people were screaming a lot, I would be photographing the moments when you could just see the connection between the people sometimes. Between the scenes, sometimes during the scenes. And I've been doing that for about a year now, I think maybe 15 or 16 different filmings at this point. And I've got what I think is an amazing collection of photos, you know, showing this kind of tenderness where you I guess some people would least expect to find it. And I love it when that happens, when there's some situation that you think, oh, this is cold and impersonal, and then right in the middle of that, it turns out, no, actually, this is very warm, intimate, and close connection between people. So I want to put together, I don't know, either a book or a show, maybe 30 or 40 images focusing on that. That's like another side project that I've got going right now.
Yeah, we've got a question coming off of Facebook. My friend David actually wanted to know, same name as yours.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to know, what is it that you see is the biggest reason couples like to have their pictures taken during sex? So in other words, we're getting some sense of, you know, your perspective as a photographer, but what do you think attracts couples to wanting to photograph them?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think that what the couples get, two things. One is the experience of being seen and watched while you're being sexual can be really exciting to people, even people who don't think of themselves as exhibitionists necessarily. I've done a number of couples where one person was very hot to trot to do this and the other person was not so sure. Interestingly, the people I've worked with, it's been kind of the women and the heterosexual couples, the women who were all set to go and the guys who maybe weren't so sure if they wanted to do this or not. But even the guys who were kind of shy ended up just having a great time knowing that there's a camera there in the background. So that's one thing, is it can just be kind of a heightened experience. But the main thing, I think, for me is, I tell this to the couples, I say, this is the only way you will ever see what you look like when you are deeply in whatever your sexual place might be. You can't see it by looking in the mirror, because then you see yourself looking in the mirror. And I don't believe that you can see the same thing in video, because you can't freeze it in the same way. You need somebody there who's got a good eye, who captures the moment that says, this is who we are. This is who these two people are when they're being sexual. And I tell the couples that what you will get from this is you will have photos of yourself that you can look at forever and say, yep, that's us, if everything goes according to plan. And I'm happy to say that, you know, out of the 200 shoots I've done, I would say, I don't know, 195 of those, that has happened remarkably well. So when I sit down with the couples afterwards and we start looking through the pictures, there'll be a moment where, say, the guy says, oh, my God, is that what I look like? And then the woman says, well, yeah, you know, she sees this all the time. And 2 minutes later, the shoe will be on the other foot, and she'll say, oh, my God, is that's what I look like? And he'll say, yep, that's what you look like. And when that happens, then I feel great, because, you know, if what I'm getting is what they each see in each other but don't get to see in themselves, then I've done my job, because I'm getting who they are when they are alone by themselves. Even though, you know, the situation with the camera has its own distortions and stuff, but I've got enough of the reality of who they are that they can recognize themselves in these pictures. And I think that's, in the end, what's in it for the couples. Now, there are couples who just think it would be a kick, it would be a thrill, it would be fun. But by the time we actually do a shoot, you know, I've laid it out to them and explained to them how it works and so on. And at that point, if they decide to go ahead with it, it's because they really are curious to see themselves. And I have to say that a lot of the people I photographed appreciate the project that we've been talking about, of putting a different kind of imagery out there into the world, and are excited to be part of that. You know, this is a way I can do something to help counter all the sexual craziness out there. I can offer myself up so that there will be these images of us, and because we're just neat people, we will be able to put a different kind of image about sexuality out into the world. And some people, I really do think that that's part of why people choose to work with me. Other photographers, you know, may find people with different motivations, but that is part of, I think people just feel good. The pictures that I take, many of them show up in Cupido because they publish a lot of my photos, or they show up in art shows that I'm part of. And then people see themselves, you know, out there in the world, kind of just saying to the world, yep, here we are, and aren't we neat, you know? And I think that that can be a tremendous shot in the arm for people. You know, I've had so many couples that say that when they see the pictures of themselves, it's such a confirmation to them of themselves. They look at it and at the pictures and they say, oh my God, I'm hot, I'm sexy, I'm beautiful. And, you know, we all can use that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever think that people are doing it too because it turns them on?
Yeah, I think that it can be a heightened experience. You know, it's like I say, even the people who didn't expect that often end up saying that they just had a great time knowing that I was there taking pictures of them. That heightened their experience. And some people even said, well, you know, one thing is we don't always take 6 hours to just stop everything we're doing and be sexual together. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really, 6 hours. That's true. Yeah.
So just to mention, I am always looking for couples to photograph. If there's a way I can get, you know, some information out there for people to be able to contact me, if anybody is listening who is interested in being photographed.
Well, absolutely. You know what? And by the way, there's a thank you from our listener, David. He appreciated your answer to his question.
Yeah, tell
the listeners how they can contact you so that they can get their moment in front of your camera.
Well, my website is at davidsteinberg.us, not .com, but .us, and it's Steinberg. And you can go there. There's some of my writing is there as well as my photography. If you go there, you'll see a number of portfolios of couples' work, so you'll get an idea of what I've done with some other people. David@davidsteinberg.us is my email address. So if you're interested in talking about what it would be like to do a shoot, drop me a line and we can take it from there. I should mention that all the books that you talked about, both the books of my own photography and of other people's photography, are available through Amazon. If I can run those by one more time, it's Divas of San Francisco is the portraits of the transsexual women that I've done. Erotic by Nature is a collection of erotic and sexual photography, not my own. It was before I was doing my own photography, mixed in with fiction. And Photosex is a collection of specifically sexual fine art photography, black and white photography, by 31 different photographers, including a number of my own photos as well.
Yeah. You do good work. And do you have a blog or anything online now? Or
I have a blog with a much neglected blog with the San Francisco Chronicle. They asked me. They have a number of bloggers they call City Brights. And, so if you can go to sfgate.com, which is the Chronicle's website.
Right.
And if you search my name or go to City Brights, which is one section of that site, it's where I do articles. For 15 years, I did a monthly column for Spectator magazine in San Francisco about sex and gender issues, and then the Spectator went out of business, and I continued doing it as an online column for a while, but then the photography kind of took over. But there are a number of articles from the Chronicle. I've been doing so much photography that I haven't been able to do as much writing as I would like, but I'm hoping to be able to get back to that more in the fall.
Oh, you and me both. I'm not doing photography, but it seems like I'm doing radio or workshops, and
yep.
I don't have time to write. But hopefully we'll both get busy on that next book, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I love doing books. Books are kind of dying, I guess, but I know.
I'm just not sure what's going on with the whole publishing world. I really am not sure.
But I still I like holding a book in my hand, and
so
like
the
quality of the photographic reproductions that you can get,
I even like the smell of old books. I mean, like, everything winds up on the Kindle, and my book's on the Kindle, and just, like, audio books, and all, you know, nobody will ever know what it's like to crack open an old book and smell that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some things are definitely going the way of whatever.
I guess. I'm hanging in there. I mean, I'm still shooting film, you know. Are you really? Although it's getting harder and harder to do that because it's hard to get film, and it's hard. I don't like to do my own lab work, so it's harder and harder to find people
who would actually
to make prints from film, because the great printmakers that I knew in San Francisco have all gone out of business because nobody's making prints anymore. So it's all switching around, but holding on to the what I still consider the higher quality of the traditional.
Well, let's face it. I mean, there are some people who are still working with VO cameras. There's just no way that digital is going to ever emulate something like that. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Ansel Adams. I have not seen an Ansel Adams type of landscape coming out of a digital camera.
Yeah.
Well, you're the photographer. Feel free to disagree with me.
Well, I think that digital is getting better all the time. I mean, you know, I have other friends who are photographers who are.
Yeah.
Everybody's gone digital, and I'm really getting to where I will need to do that.
About ready?
You
surrender? You're going to do the white flag?
Well, it's either that or hang out in the dark room myself, and I don't want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So, and digital is getting better. The quality of the cameras is getting better. The quality of the inks is getting better.
Yeah.
You can really make a beautiful digital photograph now. Personally, my preference is to be the one taking the pictures and then to be, you know, working in collaboration with somebody who's a printmaker and probably a much better printmaker than I would be at this point, and let that person take the imagery that I've got and make it beautiful on paper. So, and, you know, there's a whole art and tremendous skill, which I just admire when my
I don't think you can dodge and burn on digital, can you?
Well, yeah, I mean, differently, yeah, you can. There's ways that this is all Photoshop stuff that you can.
Yeah.
The process is different. You don't do it by dodging and burning, but you can bring out the highlights in different parts of the photos by different methods, and in some ways, you can do it at a micro level that you could not do with traditional photography.
True enough. David, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining me in the Shame Free Zone tonight. It was great to talk about old times, great to catch up, I look forward to sitting down to dinner with you sometime before this year is out.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay.
Thanks for your show.
Thank you. And to our listeners here, next week I will have Sarita. She's going to be talking about Tantra for Sex That Is Simply Divine. She's got a brand new book out called Divine Sexuality, The Joy of Tantra. I hope you'll join us next Monday. See you then.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mentus kabar berita?